Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Molly and Hall.
We trying to wake Chicago up.
Live at 5 on 670 The Score.
And here they come.
Osweiler pulls from center. No fake. Flips it out to the right side. O'Leary in for the touchdown. The grandson of Jack Nicklaus has the Miami Dolphins on the board 6-0. Mitch going to shovel it inside. Here is Trey Burton. He goes airborne for the goal line. He is in for the touchdown. 7-6 takes the snap. Mitch going to throw. Protection holds. Throwing. Middle of the end zone. Touchdown. Touchdown Bears. Allen Robinson. Here's Cohen looping inside of the 10. Cohen 5. He's in for the touchdown. And the celebration continues in Miami. Snap, Trubisky from under center, rolling right. Easy toss, a little behind Cohen. Turns the shoulder, he's in for the touchdown. 27-13, point pending here in Miami.
Hold on, something's not...
Pass interference, number 80. Offense, 10-yard penalty.
Trubisky gonna throw, Trubisky looking. Guns it over the middle, the pass is intercepted in the end zone. Here's Osweiler, gonna screen, caught Albert Wilson. He is tripped up, but now he stays on his feet and makes an inside cut on Eddie Jackson. Touchdown, snap to Trubisky. Over the middle, wide open, over the 10 to the 5, end zone, touchdown Bears. Osweiler in the gun, throws it over the middle, it is caught, 30-35, breaks a tackle, Wilson breaks another to midfield, and there he goes, Albert Wilson, destroying the Bears in the open field on the last two possessions. Extra point away from tying it up again at 3:01 to play.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall.
Your morning guy over there.
Mornings on The Score.
Snap, Trubisky. Throws it over the middle to an open Cohen to the 40.
Oh,
gets
off
the football. Here's the boot by Parkey from 53.
No.
It is no good. Placement made. Kick is up. Jason Sanders' kick is good. Dolphins win it.
It's mentally draining for the guys because they try so hard. But someone's got to win, someone's got to lose, unless you have a tie. And so for the guys, you know, they fought hard. Our coaches, our players, everyone, you know, pretty much gave everything that they had.
Mully Hall.
I'm so fired up.
Here we go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Honeymoon is ended, buddy.
It's over.
Not you and me.
No.
We're still starry-eyed. Good morning, David. I hope you had a good weekend.
Good morning, Mully. How are you?
I had a great weekend, so
good.
I'm very pleased, rested and ready to focus and get it done. But
Big Bears Monday.
It's a victory Monday because we're all winners, but sadly, it's not a victory Monday because the Bears are winners. How do you go down there and lose to Brock Osweiler? How do you do that? Did you see this statistic? This blows my mind. Brock Osweiler beat the Bears in his first start ever with Denver.
Right.
Beat the Bears in his first start ever with Houston.
Yes.
And beat the Bears now in his first start in Miami.
The Bear Slayer.
How weird is that?
It's pretty weird. It's what a backup quarterback should do. The Bears are 0 for Brocktober. I mean, it was bad because of... It was opportunity to play a backup quarterback who was pressed into action, didn't even practice all week.
It's a gift.
It's a gift. And they gave it back. And they gave it away. And
Cameron Wake was out.
Well.
That's a gift.
You look at the way the Dolphins were banged up. And their offensive line was.
They fumbled on the 1 yard line.
So.
That's a gift.
And so did the Bears.
Well, the Bears did it early. They did it when they were going to win the game.
We'll match your fumble with an interception in the end zone.
But at the point they did it, it was significantly worse because the game was over. It was overtime and they were about to win the game.
Well, you're right. Exactly right.
I'm just saying.
You can paint every scenario, and the bottom line is the Bears had an opportunity to assert themselves as a front runner in the NFC North and to come back with some credibility that had built up over the first four games and to do a lot of things that we have not seen them do in recent years. And they squandered that opportunity and they blew it and they played not to win They played, or they played not to lose, and Matt Nagy lost his nerve, and the Dolphins won the game.
Bears have now lost two games. What do those two losses have in common? Well, they were on the road, and they... Okay, that's what those losses have in common. I'm sorry, I just had to clear my throat there.
You okay?
Both those games, okay? They should have won.
You choking on something?
That's what I'm saying. Okay. They're choking on something.
Without revisiting the Packers game, how would you describe the biggest choke yesterday, if you want to call it that? Or what did you see as the biggest
without question, without a shadow of a doubt, to get to force a turnover, a game-winning play, and you turn the ball over in overtime, and then in the blink of an eye, you're at midfield. You started with the ball at like the 1 yard line, and you have to be concerned about, you know, it's any score there ends the game, and certainly in any overtime win or
Dolphins have the ball in the 1 yard line.
They Bears force a turnover,
and they force a turnover,
and then they get, and that's unbelievable. Then they get to midfield, and then you're sitting there, and you're like, okay, how far? Then the last three runs of the game before the missed field goal were inexplicable to me. Why did you pull the plug on your offense for those three plays? And I get it. You know, Jordan Howard was gassing everybody, so he's not on the field for the first one. But you run, he comes back in, and on third and five,
you run again.
You run yet again?
Yeah.
Why not gain? I mean, really. Every yard matters. It's a 53-yard field goal. I understand the guys kicked a 54-yarder. This is not a chip shot.
Well,
this is not a 53-yard field goal is not a sure thing. And once you give the ball up, you give up field position. To me, David, the play calling for that sequence, you asked me where the game was lost. I think that was inexplicable.
What was most disappointing was you have a head coach who has always been the guy who was going to be the aggressor, right? The risk taker, the innovative play caller, the guy who's the most creative guy. And you saw that for most of the game, and you see that for most of his tenure. And it's only been five games. But when you have first and 10, you're right. They get the ball at the 20. They get an unbelievable turnover, an unbelievable break. It's an opportunity there. Jordan Howard breaks off two big runs. It puts you in a great situation. You got first and 10 at the Dolphins' 41-yard line,
yep.
3.5 minutes left in overtime, and you position yourself for a 50-plus-yard field goal. It doesn't make any sense. You run the ball three straight times.
It doesn't make sense.
On third and four from the Dolphins' 35, you have all this stuff at your disposal. You're Matt Nagy. You've got the beautiful mind offensively, and you've got the risk-taking, you know, persona, and then you lose your nerve.
Run the shuffle pass.
The shuffle pass
always works.
Do whatever. Spread the field.
What was our best play of this game? What can we? Okay, let's run that again.
Whatever it is.
Wide. And then, I mean,
get the ball to Tariq Cohen. He's your best playmaker.
If he gets sacked, we're having a different conversation. You know, obviously, you get rid of the ball quickly. You don't let him get sacked in that situation. So
three straight runs gained six yards.
I thought that was a terrible answer. Well, if we get sacked, I'm up here trying to explain why we're throwing the ball. What are you talking about?
Well, he was referring to previously at the end of regulation when he decided to take the easy way out, when he decided to take the safe way. Again, that was a second opportunity that the Bears kind of, you know, you could have justified maybe being a little more aggressive by using your timeouts. You let 20 seconds go off the clock at the end of regulation. You put yourself pinned in Dolphin territory, and that's what he was referring to, is like, okay, then if he passes there, then he's got to answer if he gets sacked in the end zone. He was testy post-game because I think he was frustrated by the loss, frustrated by the refereeing, but maybe most of all, frustrated by himself.
Yeah, you pointed out, David, in your column today, and it's excellent work and people should read it. You point out that on his play sheet, his laminated sheet that he goes to for plays, he has written on there BU. It's you could see the whole thing. I would prefer if it was be yourself, but that's just me. And again, there isn't enough room, so I get it. But couldn't they be your hyphen self, even if you had to put it on there. Whatever. Why even bother with that? But be you. He wasn't him. He lost his
That's what probably
verve,
gets him.
Right?
He did. Yeah. His verve. He's the guy with the swagger because of the way that he calls plays. He is a very creative play caller. We saw that again yesterday. We've seen that every game.
No shadow of a doubt. Yep.
But when you need it most, he turned into John Fox. I mean, Dowell Loggins was on the other sidelines probably chuckling like, I have seen that before. The Bears coached themselves out of a victory here. I think that's maybe a little bit harsh and maybe a little bit like, okay, there was a lot more to that game than that.
It was a great game.
But you had an opportunity to come home 4-1.
It was a great game. The entertainment value was off the charts.
Yep.
It's fun to have the Bears be able to play like that. Okay. They had they were facing a backup quarterback who is a statue. So you know where the trigger point is going to be, and they didn't have a single
sack. An offensive line that was banged up.
With a banged up offensive line and your, you know, best front seven in football, you know, let's all pound our chest. You couldn't, and I understand, you know, Khalil Mack is the key to the whole thing, and he had an ankle issue, and that was a little bit scary, and it did seem to affect him.
It did.
But they were never going to let him beat him. They game planned to stop him.
Afterward that they used four guys to block him someplace.
You know what? But he said he told the broadcast team they were never going to let him be on his own. They're going to chip him every play. They're going to do something. And they did. And clearly, you know, it affected him. They somehow, how do you, with Brock Osweiler as the trigger man, how do you not get a sack? How do you not pound that guy at some point?
How do you give up 541 total yards? How do you? Yeah.
Was
how
it
do
a career high of his passing? Right? Wasn't 380 yards?
Career high passing yardage. third win against the Bears, as you pointed out.
Ridiculous.
541
three
total
different
yards.
Teams.
This was a Bears team that looked like they were tired. It looked like they were gassed in the conditions, and they stopped tackling. And what you hated to see, worse than all, on the 50, which one of the Albert Wilson touchdowns do you want to pick out?
How about that?
But on the longest one, the 75-yard one, the Bears quit. The Bears quit on that play.
I'll tell you what, Eddie Jackson just flat out stops running, and I couldn't believe that. He just – that's – you know – the old term, the loaf plays, right?
Yeah.
That's like a triple loaf. That, like, you get arrested for that
kind of loafing. At the 20-yard line, he stopped running.
He just stopped.
You saw Akeem Hicks motoring down, I mean, still hustling, and you see Eddie Jackson kind of just stop because he got deked. And, you know, then the guy, you never do that as a defensive back.
No, you got to keep going. Listen, there were problems in the game. Again, the entertainment value through the charts, but it was a missed opportunity. You know, if the Bears somehow win that game, you feel a lot better about it. But the fact is that they led for much of that game, and they really should have won the game. They didn't come out to play to begin the game. It took them till after halftime to get going. Once they got going, they started putting some plays together. You know, the shock thing to me too, David, is to the 75-yard touchdown pass, to come down and score and take the lead, and then one play later give it up. That's not who this team has been this year.
You're exactly right, because the tackling wasn't there. The short yardage, the short passing game is what hurt them the most. Look, Osweiler didn't go downfield that much. I think he only eight of his passes traveled 10 or more yards.
Yak.
Yak. And yak, yak, yak. The Bears are, you know,
yards after catch,
talking to themselves all the way home. Yep. It's a very difficult loss to take, as entertaining as it was, as early as it is. But you know what? You had an opportunity here to take a major step forward for your organization, and now you're looking at they come home and you're feeling like, well, same old Bears.
We'll discuss it. We've got plenty to talk about in the 5 at 5. We're going to get to that next.
Built Ford Tough Bears Mondays brought to you by Ford, inviting you to visit your local Ford store or buyfordnow.com.
It is a Built Ford Tough Bears Monday. It is a victory Monday. We will break it down. We're still all winners, despite what happened to the Bears. And we'll talk about the future as well. They've got a pretty good organization coming into town. It's not just a team. It's an organization. It's a history of victory. And it is a it is a certain confidence and swagger coming at them next week in terms of New England. We'll get into that as well. It's Mully and Haw. It's Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
What was the biggest reason for the Bears' 31-28 overtime loss to the Dolphins?
Oh, there's a whole host of reasons. There's not one simple one, but if you're looking for the biggest reason, I would say that it probably comes down to being outcoached. And that's maybe unfair, but I felt the Bears were outcoached in the game. I felt that both Matt Nagy on offense and Vic Fangio on defense were outcoached. And it's difficult to pick which of those two would be the one most outcoached, but I'm going to go with Matt Nagy because I think he kind of lost his identity a little bit during the course of the game, and I thought that that the lack of aggression in big moments really cost the Bears, and he's the overseer of the whole thing. So that's the responsibility of being a head coach. But I really think they were outcoached. It's a shocking thing to say, but you know, during the broadcast, they said at one point that Adam Gase had told them that as long as they could stay close, they felt the weather would be an advantage and that they would be able. But that's exactly what happened.
Right.
So, I mean, that's good coaching.
That's right. You know, unfortunately, I think I agree with you. You look back, this was his Mark Trestman moment. I mean, when you look back at the Trestman era, you started to have a little bit of doubt creep in after he kicked the field goal on second down in Minnesota and it backfired and the Bears lost a game they should have won. And I don't want to think that it's going to go the same direction with Matt Nagy, but I think this is the first time, maybe the first time you really looked at a loss. They've only had two of them and you felt like, okay, this could have been avoided had he stayed true to his character, had he stayed true to the type of coach he promised he would be. Just don't lose your nerve. And when you run the ball three straight times, as we pointed out, and you set up a 53-yard field goal, which is no gimme. That puts way too much confidence in a kicker who has been good from 50-plus, but you don't want to do that. You can still make it easier, reduce the margin for error. That was probably number one. Number two, your defense can't give up 540 yards, and you can't turn the ball over twice in the red zone. But I think if I were to rank them in order, I'd say coaching, defense, turnovers.
A Brock Osweiler-led offense scored 31 points on you, and it probably should have been more. After weeks of comparisons to some of the great defenses that we've seen in this city, this is the performance they gave. And it wasn't just Osweiler. A senior citizen by the name of Frank Gore is gashing you.
Wow.
The entire game.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. And we spent 2 weeks, and we should have, talking about how they're going to crush this offensive line, all the injuries they have. Your rejects are on that offensive line. You have zero sacks. Not just the sacks, finishing them off. Where was the pressure? You didn't see it all day.
Four quarterback hits, one from a defensive lineman. Akeem had one.
Albert Wilson looked like Tyreek Hill.
He did.
I mean, it was ridiculous. The defense has given up 36 points in the first three quarters of games. This defense has given up 60 points in the fourth quarter and overtime so far. It's on the defense.
The defense wasn't great. I don't think the coaching was top-notch. The weather conditions may be something that they either weren't prepared for or maybe couldn't physically handle. But I think for me, the main thing was Mitch Trubisky throws a horrible touchdown in the end zone. Jordan Howard coughs it up pretty much right on the goal line. And then you have Tariq Cohen fumbling less than 2 minutes to go in the game where you just hold on to that and you can probably put it away at that point. So you turn the ball over three times on the road, it's going to be really difficult to win. I have to point at the turnovers as the number one thing here, which kept them from getting that win yesterday.
Yeah, I'm with Joe Ostrowski. I mean, you know, we kicked around, not just us, everybody, the whole city, the word elite for this defense, and they were far, far from elite, over 500 yards to the Miami Dolphins on Sunday.
You love the interception questions, like I was counting you for that.
Did Matt Nagy lose his nerve in that game?
I think you have to say yes. I think when you look at the type of coach we were expected to see and hear, we hear all about the risk, and you know, as far back as whether it was when he was hired to the owners' meetings, when he talked about overall we're going to be much more aggressive than we are conservative. Yesterday was way too conservative, and you look at down the stretch. You know, the last series in overtime, I'm not sure what they were afraid of. I'm not sure what it almost spoke to being scared that your quarterback was going to turn the ball over because he had in the past, because he did in the end zone. I don't know what it was, but that last series was handled very safe. And if Cody Parkey hits a field goal, we're talking about how they overcame that conservatism. But I think it, he definitely lost his nerve. I think at the end of regulation, it goes back, you know, that far, because he could have called timeout, saved himself 20 seconds, and perhaps gotten the ball back with a minute to go and a chance to kind of stage a drive that, you know, if you really believe in your quarterback, if you really believe in your offense, you're willing to take that kind of risk. So I would have to say, yeah, he did lose his nerve.
I want to be careful about using the term lost his nerve. I think he lost his aggression, and I don't know if that's any different. I don't think it was like he was so shaken by things that had happened that he could no longer call a play, or, you know, it sounds like some kind of the guy's like, you know, battle scarred. I think it was just he dialed it down and he got ultra conservative at the wrong point. I don't quite understand why you want to attempt a 53-yard field goal. That is a very difficult thing to kick. That's hardly automatic. I know. Was it Atlanta? Someone kicked a 57-yard field goal.
Yes, that it was Atlanta.
Indoors. I mean, that's, you know, listen, it's a big deal to kick a 57-yard field goal, and they now have this graphic on Sunday Night Football, which was cool. Which is when, you know, when a guy kicks a field goal, here's how long it could have been from, and it was 57 on one of the 47-yard field, whatever it was. I like that idea, and that's fine if it's the last second of the game and it's kind of coming down to it and they have no time to come back or whatever it might be.
Desperation.
The idea of kicking a 53-yard field goal, excuse me, in overtime is like, you realize when you miss it, they're going the other way and they're going to have a shot, right?
Shouldn't, I mean, be your plan A.
Not your plan A. And it was almost like, well, we're within a reasonable range. Yeah, what the hell?
Why even bother?
So, I think he did lose his aggressiveness and he lost it. And I do think that maybe there was this fear that the quarterback might throw a bad pick or do something. That, you know, we can go back to talk about picks all day, the pick play and the pick, and we'll get into that, I'm sure. But that seemed to, from that point on, it seemed like he wanted no part of letting Mitch win the game. And that is a pity. It's really a pity.
Yeah, between the red zone interception by Mitch in the end zone, the Howard fumble at the goal line, the Cohen fumble earlier in the game, I think it's certainly fair to say that. But part of me is wondering, maybe this is him. I can't help but go back to him shutting it down in the playoffs last year. Maybe this is Nagy, and it's an adjustment that he has to make with his coaching when he is up, and you know they're up 21-10 yesterday in the second half, and we all think the ball game is over. I think it's fair to say he's
Joe
lost his
introducing
nerve.
The playoff loss.
You don't even need to go back that far, Joe. How about week one versus Green Bay when they were just whooping that ass and everybody thought that Green Bay was coming out and just came out completely flat. They had Aaron Rodgers injured. Sean Kizer was in that game. What were the Bears up 21-0 in that game? Second half, the play calling changed entirely, and they did lose their aggressiveness. Maybe they lost that their nerve a little bit in that game. So there is a little bit of a pattern here forming with Matt Nagy. I hope that this doesn't continue, but now that it's happened, you know, more than a couple of times, you can sort of see it going in that direction. I hope that he himself can make adjustments as well. That's what coaches and players always talk about. We'll look at the film. Look at the film. We'll make adjustments. We'll do what we have to do. I sincerely hope that he reflects upon his own play calling during these certain situations, and he can make some adjustments, as he often purports that he will.
I think the heat must have gotten to him. I mean, his bald head with that visor on was glistening. And unless he had like SPF 90 on, I'm imagining his top of his head today is as red as my rear end was yesterday watching that game. I've been supporting Matt Nagy from the get-go. I thought it was a fantastic hire. I think he had been doing everything right. I mean, the Bears did a lot of national media last week, and maybe they shouldn't have done that stuff and maybe focused on the task at hand instead of taking time to do all the national media they did. So, yes, I blame Matt Nagy and his glistening bald head yesterday.
Including the coach. Is that what you're saying? National media?
Oh, yeah. Coach did some national media last week.
Any other questions?
How did the bye week influence the Bears' performance in the loss, and was it a factor in your opinion?
I thought it was going to be a factor, and I thought it was a factor. I thought that they started out awful. They were just terrible to start the game, and as it turns out, I'm talking, you know, mainly the offense was really bad early, and couldn't get anything going, and you know, losing the chance to score some points there at the end of the half, that, you know, Jordan Howard and his whole issue, and then, you know, you give him the ball on the goal line and oops, there goes the ball, and that's tough stuff. That is a very difficult thing to kind of deal with, and then obviously the defense got progressively worse as the game went on. They, you know, at one point I thought, oh, the Bears are going to be fine in this game because I can't see Miami scoring again. And then the Bears obviously opened the second half. They were a different team, and they scored a quick couple of touchdowns and get 21 points. And you think that's pretty good, and it's not. So, I do think that the bye week, they lost some momentum. They did not start that game very well. You know, the fear was that they, you know, got fat on all this stuff that Dustin was talking about, all the national attention. You know, they didn't. You're not allowed to make them work during that bye week, and then you gave them an extra day off. So you think, could that have been a different story? I don't know, man. They were having a hard time kind of dealing with success. We had talked about that. And when you lose, I mean, look, there's not a lot of excuses, period, end of story. When you got a backup quarterback, you got a guy who is not a moving figure. That is a statue in the pocket, and you know where the release point is going to be, and you can't get to him. That's shocking when you're supposedly the best defensive front in football. And again, one guy got a quarterback hit, Akeem Hicks. The other three came from two different linebackers and a defensive back. That is not good enough. That's not good enough. So, yeah, I think that it had to play a part. I thought they did have a difficult time dealing with success, and I think it was evident in that game and in the final result.
I thought the extra time would give the offense an opportunity with Mitch Trubisky to kind of build confidence, to kind of build off that great performance against the Bucs. I didn't think it should or would build overconfidence, but that's the way the Bears played defensively. When you have, you know, they were almost stunned that the Dolphins dared to move the ball against them. And they were almost stunned how they were able to block their pass rush. And, you know, the Bears didn't blitz that much. When they did, they had some success to it, but they didn't have a lot of quarterback hurries, I think four. You know, Brock Osweiler, they were smart. Adam Gase is a very smart play caller and schemer. And they got rid of the ball very quickly against Khalil Mack, who they game planned to stop. I don't know what you can do about having a week off, because the CBA dictates that you have to give players off, but conditioning seemed to be an issue. And for the second straight second loss of the season, and they only have had two, you have seen conditioning seem to be a factor in the fourth quarter. So you don't like to see that if you're the Bears. And it was, I think, a factor yesterday, because the Dolphins seemed like the team that they were more ready for the overtime. They were more ready for the fourth quarter. And they're the team that was celebrating.
Yeah, conditioning a factor in week number 6 of the season. This is no longer September here. That defense looked nothing like what we saw in the first 4 games of the season. So it's certainly natural to walk away and say that the bye week had something to do with it. 0 points in the first half. Zero? One thing this offense has done was look great coming out of the gates, especially with the scripted play, to the point where we've been joking about it. They were number one in point differential in the first half going into yesterday. So I certainly think it seemed to be a major factor. And in the end, it looks like it was at a really bad time, but it was going to happen at some point.
Yeah, I don't know how much really the bye week had to do with how they came out of the gates. There was a big narrative going around that because Matt Nagy was from the Andy Reid tree, then therefore he would be great out of the bye as well. Just because somebody is your mentor,
Andy's
your
only won two of the last four.
Last two.
We're fading Andy Reid now.
But I'm just saying, I think that has to do with the fact that they've changed the rules about the bye week. What do you say, Joe? Where they
we can only do national media? Yeah,
no, well, they can't
hit.
Get yes.
And he's always had really good rosters, so they were probably going to win most of the time anyways.
That's probably fair to say. It was probably a slight factor, but there were so many different things that went into this. You know, I mentioned the turnovers right off the bat. I thought that was the biggest thing there. The play calling was very inconsistent. It wasn't exactly what you would hope for at certain points in that game. And the weather, it sounds like an excuse. It sounds like something that guys should just, toughen up and get over. But when you're going down there, it's 90 degrees, you got the heat index going, it's humid, you're not used to playing in that. Your body just physically isn't going to be able to do some of the things that it's normally able to do. So I'm not going to put this all on the bye week. I'm not putting this all on just one thing. It's a complete stew of issues, if you will. And honestly, I think that Brock Osweiler might have been a better option for Miami in that game yesterday. Ryan Tannehill had, the Dolphins at the 29th ranked offense in football. He's never exactly been Joe Montana himself. I think Brock Osweiler might actually have been a better option for them yesterday, and the injury could have been a blessing in disguise.
That theme started to creep in, I think, Tuesday of last week, that the bye couldn't have come at a worse time and coming off of the best game ever by the overall number two pick 2 years ago, and yada, 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 yada. They didn't score a point in the first half. So now the question is game planning. Because I would almost guarantee Matt Nagy and his coaching staff didn't take the whole week off. So what in the heck were they doing game planning? Why? Were they already game planning for the Patriots? Did they also take their eye off the prize?
Here's hoping.
It just doesn't make much sense that offense, despite the bye week, and I get that it was hot out, could not find a way to score a point. And Jordan Howard, they should have scored a point in the first half.
They were there.
I mean, Jordan Howard literally dropped the ball.
Overthrows, it was too.
You could cue up Ron Santo. He dropped the ball. But that, I just don't know what was going on in the coaching room last week during that bye week. They came out and looked unprepared. They did not look prepared to handle Miami. It's disappointing. Very, very disappointing.
Great question. It really had me thinking, man. A little too early to think. Thank you, but get my brain working for the day.
Sick of paying for high-priced Chicago parking? Well, the Chicago Wolves are celebrating their 25th anniversary season with rolled-back concessions and free parking presented by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Kia dealers. Visit ChicagoWolves.com. Do you still consider the Bears the NFC North frontrunner at 3-2?
This segment's brought to you by Credit Karma. Get your truly free credit score and free credit monitoring from Credit Karma. Download the Credit Karma app today. Credit Karma, get knowing. I don't know that I considered the Bears frontrunners unless they won yesterday. I think that it was all contingent upon the idea that they would come back from Miami 4-1. They get ready to host the Patriots, and then all of a sudden you're talking about a way different complexion to your season. I think when they come back from Miami having lost the way that they lost and having done what they did to get to this position of 3-2, you start to think, okay, there's some skepticism that has crept back into the picture. There's some familiar sort of doubt that that you have felt before. I don't think they're the front runner anymore. I think that the Minnesota Vikings are the front runner. I think the Packers are going to win tonight to give themselves three victories, and they're both going to be 3-2-1. The Bears are staring at 3-3. I mean, the Patriots come to town, and then, you know what? The Jets and the Bills, yeah, the Bills are going to, they look inviting. They're going to throw you the football. They have quarterback issues. But the Jets are running over people, and their quarterback's playing pretty well, and their defense is good. I don't know that you have any game that you, again, with the Bears, that you automatically mark as a loss, but I don't know that you have many that you mark automatically as a win either, because they proved yesterday they can lose winnable games, and they're not there yet. So, no, I don't consider them the front runner.
I have never considered the Bears the front runner for the NFC North. Even when they were in first place, I didn't consider them the front runner. I thought that that wouldn't be determined until they really faced off with the Vikings, and they would need both the Packers and the Vikings to really kind of fall off to feel like the front runner, because, of course, the Bears had lost to the Packers to start the season. And I was kind of hoping that this game would be more against coming off the bye. Schedule-wise, I would prefer to see that be a game against an NFC North team. I think that really when you start looking at the scheduling, this is a bad loss for the Bears for a couple of reasons, not the least of which is now they have New England coming in. New England coming off a victory over Kansas City. Bill Belichick just prepared for the Bears offense in a game plan last week.
Right.
Now he gets to use whatever he liked about it against what he sees from the Bears this week. He's already halfway prepared.
Without Tyreek Hill.
It'll be very interesting. And now the Bears are a much bigger step up in defense, and you would think that they will respond at Soldier Field, and they haven't lost at home. This is a really big game and a really interesting one. But I have not felt like the Bears were front runner in the NFC North since the season began. I didn't feel that way before it began. After the Mac trade, they've changed considerably. It seems like better matchups, but I think that I got to see them play two more against the Vikings and another one here against the Packers. And guess what? You know, the Lions are feeling good about themselves. They got the bye week, and they've won a couple of games, and they're probably feeling like they're a better team than they have showed thus far. I don't know if that's true, but it's going to be a real battle. I think it's a really difficult division, and I've never felt the Bears were definitely going to win it, but they're obviously a lot better than people thought.
One game separates the entire NFC North, and I also never felt that the Bears were the front runners. I've always felt that the Vikings are. You can't be the front runner in a division if you have zero wins or ties in your division and you have the worst quarterback in the division. So they need to prove more. And you haven't accomplished, you're not coming off of what the Vikings came off of with 13 wins last year and a playoff appearance. So I never felt that the Bears are front runners. The question now is, do you view them as a second team? Curious how the Packers get up for a lowly Niners team tonight.
Certainly not the front runner at this point, but I don't really see a team in the division that's quite head and shoulders above the pack. All due respect to Minnesota, you know, they look like they're probably still the favorite at this point, but I don't think that they're any great shakes themselves. You know, yesterday was a disappointing loss, but the season's not over. You don't fire the head coach. You don't start Chase Daniel next week versus the Patriots. It's a game. It's a road game. It's tough to win on the road in the NFL. You have to give credit to the Dolphins. But I don't think the Bears are the front runner, nor are they the worst team in the division either. I think it's probably a group of four fairly flawed teams in certain different categories. You know, some teams are better than others at certain things. Some teams are worse than others at certain things. I don't know who's going to win this division, but I have a feeling it's probably only going to take 9 games because I think these teams are very flawed, and I think there's going to be a lot of intra-divisional beating up on one another throughout the season.
No, I think Minnesota is the favorite to win. I think they were the preseason favorite or the co-favorite, and I think they still are. Listen, one of the things that I had hoped to see from the Bears in order to make this progression, as we were all guilty of heaping praise on them, was winning a game on the road. Now, granted, they did win the game against the Arizona Cardinals, but the same thing. They had to do all kinds of magic things in the second half to get that win. That wasn't as easy as we had hoped or as they had hoped. And then same thing, they go to Miami. Mitchell had that really great game. I don't want Mitchell Trubisky benched. I don't want Matt Nagy fired. That's not the point, but you've got to now win a game on the road. And listen, you know, Mully, you're talking about the Patriots and Bill Belichick. I'm with you, but I gotta be honest. I mean, the Bears are not the offensive machine that Kansas City is, but it gives me a little tiny bit of hope that, you know, the Patriots defense isn't all that in a bag of chips either. So maybe Nagy gets to see what the Patriots were able to, or the Chiefs were able to do to the Patriots in the second half, and they can capitalize on that because they obviously look vulnerable in that second half. Now they don't have
the same exact guys,
but Fantasy Island, is that what you said?
No. Advantage Nagy.
Advantage Nagy.
Well, I'm just saying it's Belichick against Nagy. You're taking Nagy.
No.
That's what I heard.
Dustin, great question.
With both MLB Championship Series tied, who do you believe has the advantage in each series, and what is your takeaway?
I'll give you a takeaway from each of the series. I was very surprised that the Dodgers were able to get to Milwaukee's bullpen as easily as they seemed to in both games. Now, they managed the split, but they didn't really beat up on the starters. It was they got to the bullpen twice, and that I thought Milwaukee's bullpen was better, and so that gives me a little bit of pause, and now I would say advantage Dodgers. Red Sox, they did not – they won a game without hitting a home run. That hasn't happened in the playoffs at all. They managed to score runs without hitting a home run, and that is an admirable quality. But, you know, obviously Houston got what they wanted out of
those 2016.
What?
That's an outdated concept, winning a game without hitting a homer.
Well, what is the record of teams in the playoffs without a home run right now? It's like 3-7 or something. It's 2-something. It's not.
It might be 3-11.
3-11.
You're right.
Okay, so I'm just saying that's nuts. But
it is.
It is. They managed to win a game without doing it, which tells you something. They got a lot of guys that can put together some hits.
Takeaway is I think we're going to see a rematch. I think that in the National Leagues, it kind of shows you, as you pointed out, Molly, you're right, the Dodgers getting to the bullpen was a surprise because nobody had, and the Brewers hadn't lost since September 22nd. But I think starting pitching is still something you need in the postseason, still something that has some value. You might not be able to win a series this important against a team this good without having a qualified starting pitching rotation. So I think the Dodgers have probably got the victory they needed in Milwaukee. In the American League, boy, Chris Sale in a hospital overnight, not making the trip to Houston, his velocity down in his start, the Astros getting a win in Boston. They're so good. I'm not taking anything away from the Red Sox, but you just get the feeling that the Astros are going to win this series, and you don't know what condition Sale is going to be in with for his next start, and they need him to be in top condition.
Advantage goes to the teams going home now, obviously, because they split on the road. So that's big. They have the opportunity to be very difficult too, but they have the opportunity to end the series at home with the way that the World Series is set up. NLCS takeaway, a pair of one-run games here. It just confirmed what I thought before. I think this one's going seven. This is going to be a long series. Even though it's also 1-1, I feel very differently. And they lost last night. I feel very differently about Houston. I'm with you, David. This team is so scary. And if they end up winning the World Series, we're going to be talking dynasty. Teams don't do this anymore.
You know, everybody's talked about how good the Brewers bullpen has been, and they have been fantastic. But after a while, you would think that some of these guys would run out of gas. I mean, it looks like Jeffress has reached that point. He's been pretty ineffective recently. They couldn't use Hader on Saturday because he pitched so much the night before. And David, I agree with you. I think as good as their bullpen is, and as good as the as important as a bullpen is in the playoffs, you still need, you know, at least one guy that you can really count on. And Wade Miley was pitching great. I think they pulled him a little bit too early in that game on Saturday as well, especially given how gassed their bullpen is. So maybe an inexperienced move there by Craig Counsell. But I do think that Los Angeles and Houston have the advantages in this series, not only because of experience and the fact that they've both been there, but I just think talent-wise, the depth of the Dodgers is just unbelievable. They go 25 deep on that team. They can bring in guys off the bench that would be starting for almost any other team, and Houston similar in that regard too. So I think it's headed for a Dodgers Astros rematch, and I wouldn't hate that at all because last year was pretty good.
Yeah, I agree with Kevin. It looks like Dodgers Astros, and my biggest takeaway again is that Chris Sale can't perform in the biggest games. I mean, four walks, and now all of a sudden his stomach's bothering him.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, and now he's got to sit back in Boston and not be with his team. So that's my takeaway.
You'd love to have
he
him.
Still yeah, during the regular season, great. He pitches, he gets 10 strikeouts a game. Then he needs a couple weeks off towards the end because he's so fatigued. I mean, have a sandwich. Could we put that guy on a like on
would,
a?
Would
on
you
a
rather have Quintana
protein?
Or him? Just out of curiosity.
Honestly, I mean,
don't answer.
Oh, you got him.
Take the plead the fifth.
312-644-6767 is the telephone number. Come on, what do you think? What did you think of the Bears game? A lot of fun, right? Well, what was the biggest reason that they lost the game? Give us your number one reason. Did Matt Nagy lose his nerve in that game? How did the bye week influence the Bears' performance in the loss? Did you believe that to be a factor in the way that they lost? Do you still consider the Bears the NFC North front runner at 3-2? What about the MLB Championship Series? They're tied, and who do you believe has the advantage in each one, and what is your takeaway? 312-644-6767. It's a Victory Monday. Mully and Haw on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.